Begin the current daf, Masechtas Kittin, daf Mem Dalet. Begin on the second line down for the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, continuing on the theme of our Mishnah, where we said that if someone sells a slave to a non-Jew, that's the seller is penalized, because now he has prevented this non-Jewish slave from fulfilling the mitzvahs that he has as a Eved Kenani, which is to keep the mitzvahs as a woman. He has many mitzvahs. Now that he's sold to a non-Jew, he's not going to be able to fulfill them. So we penalize him, and the Eved is Yatz Lecheres. When he gets out, if he flees from the non-Jewish owner, or actually, as we'll see later on the Gemara, we penalize the owner, the Jewish owner who sold him, to redeem him and then not work him, he's Yatz Lecheres. Now, moreover, the Gemara quoted Abraisa that said, even if he doesn't sell him to the non-Jewish person, but rather he uses him as collateral, but for the moment that he defaults on the loan, on that there's nimusai, that the non-Jewish owner goes and takes hold of, or is allowed to take hold of the slave, then the person has already violated this rabbinic injunction, and hence the Eved is Yatz Lecheres. Now, that's why our Gemara continues and says, Tarabon Ulinda Braisa, however, that there are exceptions, that although the non-Jewish person will be taking the slave, this Eved Kenani, as payment for a debt, that there are exceptions that the Jewish owner will not be penalized. For example, let's say Gavoi, the non-Jewish person, collects the slave from the Jew b'chayvoi, because of a debt that the Jewish person owed him. Now, as Rashi explains, and this is why it's different, the Jewish person is not selling his slave, neither did he borrow from the non-Jewish lender with the slave being collateral. He's just collecting. You owe me money, and he finds something of the Jews, and he grabs it away, and he grabs the slave. Oy shalakoche sikruikin, or it's a type of a case, for example, there are certain times in history that the Jewish people were like Hefker, that any non-Jew who wanted to kill it would kill a Jew. And so a Jewish person wanted to just like keep himself alive, so he would tell it to the non-Jew, Sokarka zu, with the word sikrukin, Sokarka, here, take this land, take this slave, just leave me alive, take whatever you want. So let's say it's one of those sikrukin that's going to kill him, and he says, here, take my slave. So says the Braisa, regarding these two type of cases, lo yotz lecheres. These are situations where although the non-Jew is taking, there's a transfer of the slave from the Jew to the non-Jew, the slave will not go free. And the reason being is because it's what's called an oinus. It's under duress that the Jewish person does that. It's something beyond his control, and therefore we don't penalize him. The penalty is, when he does it willingly, that's something that you violated, then now the slave cannot keep these mitzvahs, so we penalize you in these yatz lecheres, in contrast when it's an oinus. That's what the Braisa says. On that, the Gemara asks, "Ubechayv eloi, is that really true, that if the non-Jewish person is coming to collect the debt from the debtor, the Jew, and he takes the slave, that's not considered as if there's a valid transfer from the Jew to the non-Jew to penalize the Jewish owner, to be yatz lecheres?" But for a minute, we can ask a contradiction from the following Braisa in a different context. The Braisa says, "Harisha ansei beis ha-melech goynoi." That is, if the government, from the king, they forcefully take away his granary. Now, so the Braisa says, depends why they're doing it. Im b'chayvoi, if he owes taxes, if he owes money to the government, and therefore they're confiscating his granary. So actually, says the Braisa, chayiv la'aser. He has to now take off a tithe from that produce, from the granary, which was taken by the government, because it's as if he sold it to them. In other words, it's your produce. Now you're selling, but it was your produce that you finished. You have to take off a tithe from all the produce that you had. And therefore, even though you're not getting it because it's going to the government, but it's something that you owed that money. So it's something that you're gaining. It's like you're selling that, and it's a barter system. Okay, I'm giving you the produce for the money I owe you. So you have to take off tithes from that produce. Now, in ban parois, however, the fact that they confiscated was not for money that you owed, it's a total loss, then patim al-asa, then you'll be exempt from taking off ma'isa, because nothing that you gained, it was a total loss. You didn't get the payers at the end. But one thing that we see is that if someone is collecting a debt, even against your will, they're confiscating that item, it's considered that it is yours. It's something that you did willingly, even though it was under duress, but it's something that you're gaining. So that's why you're chayiv ma'isa. So why is it any different than this braisa that is lo yotz lecheres? Seemingly it should be the same type of idea, whereas that you're gaining, so it's as if you're an accomplice in this crime, so we should penalize you by the eved. So I think Gemara says no. They're fundamentally different, because Shani Hassam, there it's different when it was because of his debt to the government that they confiscated his granary. Because ultimately, he gains from that because now his debt to the government is paid up. So therefore, regarding the halachas of Meiser, he's going to be obligated Meiser on that in that produce that they took. Now, that's because of the halachas of Meiser. But regarding a slave, the penalty is because he sold his slave to a non-Jew. Now, this guy didn't willingly, agreeably sell his slave. It's just that their collector came and took by himself. So why although he's gaining, that now he doesn't owe a debt, but why should we penalize him? If it was up to me, I wouldn't necessarily have given the slave. The whole reason of the penalty is because you willingly gave it. So it's not just because of a benefit, it's that you willingly did it, and you don't have to buy the Eved. And that's why by the case of the Eved is lo yatz l'cheres, in contrast when they're collecting a chayv ba'inis. By the case of Meiser, you would be chayv Meiser. So the Gemara says, Toshima, let's bring a riot regarding this question that the Gemara had asked, that is it really so that when there's someone is collecting ba'inis, for example, in the case of Eved, it is not going to be yatz l'cheres? But the Amar Rav said the following halacha. So the Meicher Avdoi Lefarhang. If someone sells his slave to a farhang, a farhang is basically a blackmailer who spreads rumors, and he says that there's a certain amount of money that he's trying to extort from the person, and for payment for that extortion, he sells his slave to that blackmailer that's an Ovid Kerchavim, that's a non-Jew. Says Rav, Yotz Lecheres, now that you sold him to a non-Jew, he goes free. That's the penalty of our Mishnah. So we see, even though it's a situation of Einus where he has no choice, he's dealing with an extortionist, with a blackmailer, still he's going to be Yotz Lecheres. That contradicts the halacha that we're bringing from the Braisa. Now the Gemara says, no, it's different. Hasim Havali Lefayas, there by the blackmailer, he should have appeased him with something else. He doesn't care what you give him. He wants a certain amount of money from you. V'loy Pius. And you didn't appease him with something else. You rather willingly gave him in payment of what he's blackmailing you, the slave. That was your own prerogative, and therefore that is like selling him the slave, not oinus in the slave itself, although a general oinus, and that's why there the halacha is different, as Rav says, that is going to be atzlacheres. Similarly, the Gemara quotes Gufa, quotes the same halacha, and has the same discussion where Amar Rav said, as we just quoted, says, Amoicher Abdullah Farhang, Oivik Kachavim, if someone sells a slave to a non-Jewish blackmailer, Yotz Lecheres, the slave goes free. Which the question is, my Havli Lemebed, what should he have done? What he means? Just like the Bryce that says that if they're taking something against your will, they're forcing you, that the Eved is not Yotz Lecheres. That the Gemara says, as we said, Havli Lefayas, Lefayas. It's not true. He should have appeased him with something else and not the slave. And the fact that he gave over his slave willingly for the blackmailing is something like Moicher Avdoi, and that's why he's Yotz Lecheres. By Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the following question, again, all related to this theme about selling your Eved to a non-Jew. Let's say Machar L'Shleishim Yoyim. Let's say he sells his slave to a non-Jew just for 30 days. And then after 30 days, it's going to go back to the Jew. Mahu, what's Allah over there? Ultimately, you did sell him, but it's for a limited time. Would the penalty apply there too or not? So the Gemara says, Tashma, let's bring a Rai Dama Rav, from this statement that we just said before from Rav. That Rav said, Amoicher Avdi L'Farhang Evi Kechavim, if someone sells his slave to a non-Jewish blackmailer, Yotz L'Cheres, he goes free. Whereas Rashi explains, the Gemara's assumption is that he just wants him to do some work for the government, for the king, until a certain amount of time. That's what he's blackmailing him, then he'll go back. So you see that even though it's for a limited time, still the halacha is Yotz L'Cheres. The Gemara says, no Raya, because Hasan B'Farhang Evi Kechavim She'in L'Cheres. There, the guy who's extorting from him is taking him that he'll never get him back. So there the halacha is that Yatz L'Cheres, and if there's no Raya, if it was for a limited time, what would the halacha be? So the Gemara moves on to a different type of a question. Machre chutz mimalachtei mahu. What's the halacha if he sells him to a non-Jew, and he says, look, you own the body of this slave, but as long as you don't work him. In other words, he's only selling him for the purposes that he could use his male slave to impregnate, to get married to to that non-Jew's maidservant to have children. What's halacha over there? Because the whole reason what we said was we were penalizing him because he's not going to be able to keep the mitzvahs. He could do whatever he wants. He's not working. He just wants him to have children from his maidservant, and which is allowed with an eved. Or let's say he tells him chutz min ha-mitzvahs ma'hu. He says, look, I'll sell you my slave, but as long as you let him keep the mitzvahs, what would be halacha over there? Or chutz mishabas v'yam tov ma'hu. It says, look, I'm selling you my slave, but as long as you don't work him on the Sabbath and on the holidays. Or Liger Taishav, let's say the Jew sells him to a Ger Taishav, which is the resident convert, which is someone that accepts upon that he's a non-Jew. He says himself, however, not to do idol worship, but he eats non-kosher. What's the halacha over there? Or Li Yisrael Mumer, meaning to say he's someone that appreciates the Jewish law, so maybe he's not going to make the non-Jewish slave violate halacha. What's halacha over there? But he's not a Jew. Or Li Yisrael Mumer, let's say he sells him to a renegade Jew, someone that, although he's Jewish, and that's his intrinsic state, but he rebels and he doesn't keep Judaism. What's halacha over there? Mahu. Or Lakuti Mahu. What's halacha if he sells him to a Kuti, which is the discussion there from, they were non-Jews that were brought into the place of where the 10 tribes were by the Syrians, and then they converted, but not necessarily a full-fledged conversion. So what's halacha in all these situations? So the Gemara says, Pashan Mihu, however, one of them you could prove from a Braisa. Chada is one of these cases, which is, as the Braisa says clearly, Ger Teshev, if you sell them to a which the definition is resident convert, but it means to say this type of a person that doesn't serve idols, but doesn't keep the rest of Judaism in regards to he eats non-kosher, harehu ka'ev kachav. That's like selling him to a non-Jew, and therefore, yes, if you sell him to Ger Teshev, the Eved would be Yatzel Cheres, he would go free. Now, Kuti bi Yisrael Mumer, regarding a Kuti and a renegade Jew, Amrilo ka'ev kachav, some say it's like selling him to a non-Jew, and he would go free. Vamrilo ka'Yisrael, and some say it's selling to a Jew, because, like the case of Yisrael Mumer, he is a Jew, and the Kuti also, some qualify him as a Geri Emes, so then they would be like a Jew. That's the machlekes regarding Kuti and Yisrael Mum. If you sell them to them, if it'll be Yatzel Cheres or not. Now, continuing on this theme of our Mishnah of the Knas, that they penalize the person for selling an Eved either to a non-Jew or Lachutz Laretz. So the Gemara says, Boi Yimineim Rabami, they had asked the following question from Rabami. Eved Shehippel Atzma Ligiyasis. If a slave put himself in a certain situation where there were bandits coming around, marauding troops, and they were pillaging the town, now the slave figured, hey, here's my opportunity. I want to get away from my master, but I can't because he owns me. So he goes and he throws himself at these bandits, and then they take him. Well, we found someone to take him with him. Now, v'ein rabba yachalaitzi, now the master has no way of getting and extracting, getting back his slave. Loi bedini Yisrael, not with Jewish law, not with the non-Jewish law, it's all chaos, there's no way for him to get back his slave. What's the halacha? Could he at least demand that they give him the value of the slave? They took the slave, they're like, oh, he's a great guy, we're going to take him on all our expenditures, everything that we're on all our trips that we're going on. What's the halacha? Could he at least demand he gets the money back? In other words, would that be considered as if he's selling him to them? Because he does own the slave still. And if he's going to take his money, it's like he's selling them, which would be forbidden, and then we penalize him. Or is he allowed to take the money? So Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbi Zreika, so Rabbi Yirmiyah said to Rabbi Zreika, regarding this question that they had asked of Rav Ami, he says, Puk ayin b'mechatach, go out and look into your Mishnayis, which were organized by you, to see what to answer to respond to this question. So Nafak, so he went out, Duck, he analyzed, Va'ashkach, and he found the answer. The Tani says, I could prove it from the following Braisa. The Braisa says, Amicha Beisa Lo'evid Kechavim. If someone sells his house in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew, which is actually forbidden, as the Pasuk says, Lo'isa Chinam, which one of the interpretations of Chinam is that you shouldn't give them Chaniya, a resting place in the land of Eretz Yisrael. So that's forbidden. So the Braisa says, Dama Vasurin, if you sell your house to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael, the money is forbidden to have pleasure from, to have benefit from. Now, however, says the Braisa, let's say a non-Jew just rips the Jew out and forcibly takes over his house. Now the owner has no way of getting his house back. Loi bedini Yisrael, the Jewish law is not going to help. Loi bedini of Kechavim, the non-Jewish law is not going to help. He has no way of getting his house back. Says the Braisa, mutr litl azdamav. He's permitted to take the money, at least demand you pay me the money of the house that you stole from me. Moreover, b'kesev, he even writes a document with this non-Jewish thief, umalabar koishaleh, and he goes and he develops this into the non-Jewish courts to have him sign it over there, even though that's usually forbidden because you're showing some sign of distinction to the non-Jewish courts over the Jewish courts. And the reason why this is allowed is miyadim. So although you're not allowed to sell the house and you're taking the money, and although you're not allowed to go to their courts and you are, it's because like you're saving from non-Jewish hands because it's a total loss anyway, you might as well get some Jewish money back from him and therefore it's permitted. So seemingly, you see that although something is forbidden to sell, but once they forcibly took it from you, you could take your money. That would be the same thing over here by the Eved. But he continues and he says, V'dilma, but maybe that the of the rabbis didn't make a gzeira by selling the house in Eretz Yisrael when they grab it away from you, that to be concerned that if we let you take the money when the non-Jew rips away the house from you, then maybe you might come to actually then sell it willingly on your own, your house, to a non-Jew. Because maybe hanemili bais, maybe that was only allowed by a house, because the kivin de leisagile b'lei bais, since a person can't live without a house, we're not concerned that he's just going to be selling his house to non-Jews. Because it's a house is something you usually hold on to. So when it's ripped away, we're not, and we let you take the money, we're not concerned that now you're just going to be selling your house to non-Jews. Aval avda the sagi libale avda. But regarding a slave, where it's possible to live without a slave, you could take care of your own things. We're concerned maybe that asil zvune, that maybe here we should make a gzera, that if we let you take the money when he steals the avid from you, that maybe you might come to sell it on your own without being forced to be able to get money from the non-Jew. And therefore he says that maybe you can't really prove it from the price of the house. Or maybe not. Or says, maybe it is permitted. Maybe it is the same thing as the case of the house. You would say maybe there's reason to differentiate, or maybe not. That was the question. He couldn't fully resolve it as he thought from the Brisa. Now, however, Sholach Lahu Rabami, who, as we start off the Gemara, that this is the question they had asked from Rabami. So Rabami sent back the response to those who had asked him. He said, Mini Ami Bar Nosan, from me, Ami, the son of Nosan, Toiru Yaitza. This teaching will go out l'chol Yisrael to the entire Jewish people, which is Eved Shehippel Atzma L'Giyosis. If someone has a slave that throws himself to the bandits, Ve'ein Rabbi Yochel Etzir. Now the master can't get him back. Lo Yibedin Yisrael, but Lo Yibedin Eved Kechavim. Now with Jewish or non-Jewish law, Mutr Litlas Damav. He says that you are permitted to take the value. V'Kaysev Amalabar Kaysh L'Eved Kechavim. You could even go and develop the document in the non-Jewish courts. It's like saving whatever you have anyway. Anyways, they're going to hold on to him. So you might as well get some money out of it and save that Jewish money that was stolen away. And it is permitted. Now the Gemara continues, Amir B'Shub Ben Levi. Regarding this halacha that we mentioned in the Mishnah, HaMoicher Avdi La'Evik Kechavim, if someone sells his slave to a non-Jew, so not only did we say that we penalize him that now if the slave, let's say, escapes from his non-Jewish owner, he's Yatz L'Cheres, but moreover, says Rabbi Shimon Levi, he says, Kain Zemaisai, we actually penalize the Jewish owner who sold him to the non-Jew to redeem him from the non-Jew. Ad Mei Bedamav. He has to pay up until 100, like he did something wrong. Now to make up for it, he has to try to buy him back from the non-Jewish owner up till 100 times the value of the slave. Now the Gemara wonders, Davka or Lav Davka? Is this precisely that, as he said, 100 times the value? Or of course we don't make him pay up until 100 times the value. It's just what's called an exaggeration, but it means to say you really got to try to pay out to get him out of there from the non-Jewish owner. So the Gemara said, Tashma, let's bring a raya, because the Amr Shlokish or Shlokish said, HaMoicher Behema Gasa La'Evik Kechavim. It says that if someone sells what's called a Behema Gasa, which are large animals, cattle, if he sells that large animal to a non-Jew, Ad Asar B'Demeo. So they penalize him up that he has to pay and buy it back from the non-Jew up until 10 times the amount of the value of that animal. Now, what we see is that obviously that the penalty that the rabbis made regarding the sale of the slave, that we don't penalize that much. We see that it's only up until 10 times the amount. And the fact that they said when you have to buy him back up till 100 times the amount, that was just what's called a guzma. That's like the exaggeration. But we see when you have to buy back from things that were forbiddenly sold to a non-Jew, it's only up until 10 times the amount. Now, this halacha of selling the animal, a large animal to a non-Jew, is based on a halacha that's brought in Masechet Avodah Zarah Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph, which is you're not allowed to sell a behema gasa to a non-Jew because we're concerned that you might lend or rent by Shabbos time, and then you're going to test it out to show them how it works, and you're going to be violating halacha of Shabbos. Therefore, you're never allowed to do that. But one thing we see is that 100 is just an exaggeration. Another thing Gemara says, no. The Dilma Shani Eved, that maybe a slave is different. In other words, maybe I would tell you that it is precise, that actually Shuban Levi requires that you give up until 100 times the amount. But a slave is different. Why, although an animal is only 10 times the amount, but a slave is 100 times the amount, because every single day that he's by the non-Jew, he's losing out the mitzvahs that he's supposed to do. So that's why we penalize you so much, up until 100 times. Because by the animal, then we only penalize you 10 times the amount. That's one version. Vigad Ami, that those that say the flip side type of a version. That Amir B'Shuman Levi, he said, HaMoicher Avdi La'Evi Kechavim, someone sells his slave to a non-Jew, this version has it that the penalty is up until 10 times the amount of the slave. So on that, the Gemara asked, Dafka, is it precisely up until 10 times the amount? Olav Davka, or was it not precise? In other words, if they would ask from him more than 10 times the amount, we would penalize him until he finally gets him out, even much more than that. The reason why he said 10 was just because that's normative. Usually they don't ask you more than 10 times the amount. So was it Davka or Lav Davka? So the Gemara says, Toshma let's bring a raya, the Amr Shlokesh, the Rish Lokesh said, someone sells a large animal to a non-Jew, here again, the versions are flipped, that the selling the large animal, we penalize him to pay up until 100 times the value. So the Gemara's assumption now is that, so we see that the same thing would apply to the slave, that really 10 was just the regular generic number, but of course it would be even more, even up until 100 times the amount, like we see by the Behema Gasa. So now the Gemara answers that no. Maybe actually both of them were precise. The animal up until 100, the slave only up until 10. Now the reason why by a slave we don't penalize you that much like by the Behema Gasa is because Shani Eved Le Hadule. The slave is different because the slave doesn't go back to the master. As we mentioned in the Mishnah, the moment he redeems him from the non-Jewish owner that he sold him to, as the Mishnah says, is Yatz L'Cheres. So he's not really getting that much. He's not even going to get it back when he redeems it. So therefore, we don't penalize him that much. Whereas by the animal, when you redeem him back from the non-Jewish owner, you're going to get it back. So therefore, you're not losing that much. So therefore, we penalize you even more. To which the Gemara asks, wait a second. That Ela Behema Taima Mai, so by the animal, by the Behema Gasa, what's the reason that we penalize him up until 100 times the amount? Mishum de Hadrule? Because he's getting the animal back? But if that's the case, Likna said Tvei Chad, so okay, penalize him one more than the 10 times the amount that it is by the slave. And the reason being is because he's just getting back the animal itself. In other words, the reason why you're saying that we penalize him more is because he gets it back. So good, only thing he's getting over the one who sold the slave and is redeeming the slave is the value of the animal itself. But how can you jump from 10 times the amount, which is by a slave, to 100 times the amount, which is by the animal, as Rashi's terminology sums up? He says, "Oy loy b'chazar zu." Woe to the person who, he's getting the animal back, so therefore you penalize him from 10 to 100, 90 times more? That wouldn't make sense, mathematical. Why? Because he's getting the animal back. Do you penalize him that much? So rather, the Gemara gives a different interpretation. It says, Eved is milsa le'shricha. It's not too common that a Jewish person should sell his slave, who is somewhat of a Jew already because he keeps the mitzvahs like a woman, to sell him to a non-Jew. So therefore, we don't penalize him so much, as in general, the halacha is that milsa le'shricha le'gaza b'rabanan. It's something that's not so common. The rabbis don't usually make a gzira. So although here that they're penalizing up until 10, since it's not so common, it'll be only up until 10. But an animal, something that's more common, that you would sell your animal to in commerce, you deal with non-Jews, therefore the penalty is much greater, up until 100, because that's something that's more common. And again, however, but there's no raya, as the Gemara had attempted to bring, that we see that in this second version, that we thought that 10 is lav davka, because we see by an animal is 100, and that the Gemara says, no, could be that they're different, and precisely so, because by the case of the Eved, it's not so common, so we only penalize you up until 10, but the animal, which is more common, it can be up until 100. Continuing on these halachas of the penalty of someone who sells his slave to a non-Jew, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the following question, Rabbi Abasi. Mocher avdei v'mes. If a Jewish owner of a slave sells his slave to a non-Jew, and then the Jewish master dies, mahu sheyiknusu es benoy achar. What's the halacha if we penalize his son after him to now redeem the slave that his father had sold off? As the Gemara explains the question, if you're going to say regarding a similar question that's asked in Masechtas Bechiras, which is regarding a kayin who is tsarim oizen bechar, who he goes and he cuts off a piece of the ear of a firstborn animal, which is because what happens is that one of the matnas kohuna is to get a bechar, the firstborn animal goes to the kayin. Thing is, if it's a complete animal, that's brought in the Beis HaMikdash as a carbon, and he loses out. But if it's a balmum, if it has a blemish, he gets to keep the whole thing for himself. So what the kohen would do, inappropriately, if he cuts off the ear, it makes a balmum. Now he could hold on to that. So the Gemara tells us that if he violates this isra of kalmum lo yiyaboy, you're not allowed to make a blemish in a carbon, which is what a bechair is, The penalty that we apply to the kohen is lo yishchot lamas. He's now forever, it's forbidden to him. He's never allowed to slaughter it forever. Now, the Gemara there, here, there, Claire's asked the question, what's the halacha if he was tzarim oizen b'char, he cut the ear of the firstborn animal, umeis, and then that kayin died. So the question posed over there, what's the halacha? Do we penalize his son who inherits the animal after him? So on that is what the Gemara is saying, that even if you're going to say over there, in that case of the kayin who is tzarim oizen b'char, that kantu b'nai acharav, that we penalize his son after him, still the Gemara says we cannot resolve our question from that question over there. Why? Because mishum over there, mishum di isur de raisihi, because there the father violated a biblical precept of kalmum lo yibay. So maybe over there is where we penalize the son of a father who did violate a biblical precept. Aval hacha, but over here, by when his father sold the slave to a non-Jew, all it was isur drabanan. The father only violated a rabbinic a precept. So maybe there we won't say that we'll penalize the son after him. Now, moreover, as Gemara continues on Talmud Beis, so you can't really resolve the question, even if we would resolve the question of Tzarim Oizim Bechir regarding the son, maybe there it's different. And now, Ve'im Timit Zalem, if you're going to say, to try to say, well, this is the same question that we have by Kivim Malachta B'mayid, when someone has a malacha, work that he could do before the Yomtiv, which malacha is forbidden to be done on Yomtiv and even Chol HaMoed, besides certain exceptions, or he could do the work after Chol HaMoed, after the Yomtiv itself. But what this person did is that, no, he's busy during the week. He's like, you know, Chol HaMoed, I know certain things are permitted, so he specifically waits till right before the Yomtiv, the Moed, to start doing the Malacha, which then what happens is that if he doesn't finish before the Yomtiv, it's now it's a davar avad, it's going to be a loss. I started working on it and it's soaking now and it's going to get ruined if I don't do it before the end of Yom Tov, which is permitted to conclude on Chol HaMoed. So the Mishnah says over there on Moed Katan, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Alef, that if a person was mechaven, he specifically did his work, that it should come out, that it'll be a davar avad on Yom Tov, that's something that it's a loss. Because you're doing it, you're mechav malach b'mayid, you specifically did it, they should be allowed to do it, that's inappropriate, and you're not allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed, even if it's going to get lost. Now, the Gemara there asks, regarding, let's say someone did that, he was mechav malach, he right before Yom Tov, Erev Yom Tov, boom, he starts doing the work, which he's causing it to be in the situation of a davar avad on Yom Tov. Umeis, and then he dies, so the question asked over there is, what's the halacha, do we penalize his son after him? In other words, can the son now work that thing which he inherited from his father on Chol HaMoed because of davar avad, or not because it's a penalty from that he's inheriting from his father? So, and that's what the Gemara is saying, that even if you're going to say regarding that question that we penalize the son, even though he himself didn't do an Isser, then for sure, as Rashi explains, for sure that we would penalize in our case over here, where at least the father did an Isser, he did something forbidden, even though it's rabbinic, there he didn't do any Isser yet, because it wasn't even Chol HaMoed yet. You just started doing before. You didn't do anything wrong yet. So for sure, yes, in our case, it would be obvious that we would penalize the son, that he would have to redeem the Eved. But what the Gemara is saying is that if you say over there that Loi Kansu B'Noi Acharav, that if we would resolve that question over there, that we don't penalize the son after the father, so then you could still ask the question over here by the Eved. Because over there you could say Meshum Deloy Avad, because the father didn't do any Isur, he didn't do anything forbidden, because he died before the Yom Tov itself, and he didn't yet come to do what he had planned to do, which was to do the Malacha Davar Avon Chol HaMoed, because he died before Yom Tov. So maybe over there the son would not be penalized, again, if that's the answer over there, and could do the Malacha of Davar Avon Chol HaMoed. But Hachamai, what would be the Halacha over here? Here, where the father did an Isur, at least, a rabbinic Isur, maybe we do penalize the son. So there's no answer. You can't resolve it neither from the case of Tzarim Oisin Bechayr or from the case of Kivim Malachte B'mayit. So the Gemara crystallized the question. So what's the question we have over here? Do we say L'didei Kansu Rabbanan V'Halesa? Do we say that who is penalized? The person was penalized. The one who did the Isser, and he's not around anymore there, but there's no more penalty anymore. Aydima L'Mamaynu Kansu Rabbanan. Or do we say that the rabbis penalized his assets, his money, because ultimately the penalty is not on him, it's that his money he has to use now to redeem the slave that he had sold to the non-Jew. So the money is where the penalty is on. V'ha'isa, and the money's still around in the hands of his son who inherited that money, and therefore the son is included in the penalty to have to redeem the slave. So Amalei Tenisu, so he answered him and he says, he could resolve it from a Mishnah Masech to Shvias. The Mishnah says, Sadesh Niskavtsa B'Shvias, regarding a field that was niskavtsa, which comes from the root of koitz, meaning to say that the thorns and thistles were taken out of the field in the Shemitah year, just to make the field look beautiful. Now that's not biblical working land, because you're not doing it to work the land, to fertilize, to plow and to sow the land. That's forbidden on Shemitah year biblically. But that's not what you're doing. You're just taking it to look nice. You're taking out all the thorns. So if someone does that in the Shemitah year, we don't penalize them. And Tizra l'matzah shvi'is, you can go ahead now and plant the field right after the Shemitah year. Now, but if netaiva, if he fertilizes the field, which means to say he takes wagons and bundles and he takes them out in the field and fertilizes the field, oy nedaira, which is another way of fertilizing the field, by nedaira, it's in the word of deer, which is making a pen. You put animals and you close them in certain areas of the field, and then they fertilize the field over there. So that's working the land. That's helping it get better to be able to sow the land. So doing that type of a work, we penalize him, and therefore loy tizlo matzah shvi'is, he cannot go ahead now plant after the Shemitah year, because we penalize him for violating the halacha of working the field in the Shemitah year. That's what the Mishnah says over there. So on that, the Gemara continues, and ba'amr b'yisr b'chenina, he says, naktina, we have a tradition that hetiva v'meis, if someone did this prohibited work on the Shemitah year, he fertilized it, and he died, b'noi zayra, the son could come now at the end of Shemitah, matzah shvi'is, and he could go ahead and plant it. So says the Gemara, Amalididei Kansarabanan. We see that the penalty is on the person, Librela Kansarabanan, but the penalties were not imposed on the son, and therefore that answers our question. The son would not have to redeem the slave that his father had sold to the non-Jew. So to Amar Abaye, Abaye says, Naktina, we have a tradition, Timei Tahara Shel Chaveiro V'meis. If let's say someone took pure things of his friend, like let's say Truma, and he made it Tamei, which now totally kills it, and then the one who was mazik by being metamed dies, like kanser abanon b'noy achrab. The rabbis did not penalize the son after him to have to pay up the debt. Now, as Rashi explains, although the one who did metamed, he would have to pay, as we learn in the Mishnah later on, in Dafnan Beis and Beis, that if someone's metame or medama or menasech, which are different ways of making problems for the produce of that person, which is not, it's not an obvious damage because the thing is still around, but you're making it either tamei or mixing it with things that make it halachically problematic. So if he does it by mistake, he's exempt. But if he does it deliberately, he'd be liable. So although the father would be responsible, but the son is not. To which the Gemara says, my time. Well, what's the reason for this? So that's as we're saying. Because hezik shein in nika, the truth is, damage is not recognizable, which that's the case we're discussing, where you don't see anything to the naked eye on the produce that you metam. It looks the same fruit as it was up until now, so it's not recognizable. There actually the halacha is lo shmei hezek. According to biblical law, his property would not be responsible for the damage that he did. Nebuchadnezzar drabonhi, that's a rabbinic penalty that, yes, it's the same thing as it always was, but now halachically the person can't go eat it anymore. So we penalize you for having, quote, damaged the person's produce. So that's like, as we said before, Abaye says the same thing. L'didei kanser rabbanan. The penalty is on the person, librei loika kanser rabbanan. But the son, the rabbis, did not penalize, and therefore the son's not going to be responsible to pay for the damages of hezek shein and nika, which again is a knas rabbanan, for the damages on that person's produce that his father had caused. Now the Gemara continues quoting from our Mishnah, that continues on to the second element mentioned in our Mishnah. First we were discussing what the Mishnah spoke about of someone's meicher, we penalize him when he sells a slave to a non-Jew. Then the Mishnah said that or if someone sells his slave if he lives in Eretz Yisrael, to out of Eretz Yisrael, so again, there we also penalize him that the slave is Yoytz L'Cheres. So the Gemara brings Taraban within the Braisa that elaborates on this halacha of our Mishnah. The Braisa says, if someone sells a slave to out of Eretz Yisrael, even to another Jew, because if it was a non-Jew anyway, he would go free. Yotz l'cheres, he goes free, and v'tzach get shichur mirabbi sheni. In other words, just as we had brought in the braisa regarding the first halacha, that although he goes free when you sell him to a non-Jew, he needs a get shichur from his first master. Here, he needs to have a get shichur from his second master because it was a sale that he had done to the second Jew out of Eretz Yisrael. But so we penalize, and the slave goes free, and he needs to get shichur from his second master. That's the one who had bought him, but now he has to free him. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, he says, "Pamim yatsa upam lo yatsa." No, sometimes he goes free and sometimes not. Ketzat, how is that? So he says, If Amar, if the seller who is selling him from Eretz Yisrael to this person, this new owner, this Rabbi Sheni, who lives out of Eretz Yisrael, if when he sold him, he said as follows. He said, Pleini avdi mechartihu, this one of my slaves, I sold him, lepleini antuchia, to that person of Antuchia. Now, that sounds like, meaning the native of Antuchia from Antioch, which was out of Eretz Yisrael. Now, it doesn't sound like necessarily that he was born there and that he lives there now in Antioch. You could say, therefore, that he only sold him on the condition that he's not going to take him from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. Therefore, lo yotza. So it says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, in that type of a case, the slave would not go out free. And even if he ends up taking him to Antioch where he lives, you could say that he's going to come back at one day. Meaning, and he's not taking him to take him forever to Antioch. So even if he takes him, he's not yotz lecheres. But, says Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, if he says that I sold him la'antoichi sheba Antuchia, to this native of Antioch who's in Antuchia, which sounds like that's where he lives, and that's the intention of the sale was to take him to where he lives, then yotz, that's Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says that then if you sell him to that person in Chutz La'aretz, then he would go free, but it's only if the wording that he said that he's making the sale for is sounds like that he's telling him that he should go ahead and live with him out of Eretz Yisrael. But if not, he could maintain him even though he ends up taking him out of Eretz Yisrael. Now, that the Gemara asks, but Vatani learned the Braisa that seems to contradict this. The Braisa says, Mechartiyu la'antuchi yotza. If the first master sells his slave and he says, I sold him to this Antochi, to this native of Antochi, he does go out. La'antuchi hashori belud. But if let's say he says that I'm selling this to this native of Antioch, who, however, now currently dwells in Lud, which is Eretz Yisrael, then Layotza, then he doesn't go out. But the first halacha contradicts Reb Shimon Gamliel. He said that if you say Lantuchi, you don't go out, because it's not necessarily that he's telling him to take him out to Antioch. But here, in the second brace, it says clearly that if he says I sell him to Antochi, he does go out. So the Gemara says Loikash, it's not a contradiction. The first price of that of Reb Shimon Gamliel, where we said that if you say Lepleini Antochi, I'm selling it to that guy, the native of Antioch, who we said Lo Yotze, it doesn't go out, until he also says L'Antochi Sheba Antochia, which would sound like that's where he lives right now, that's because that's talking about the Islay, that Antioch, that person, that native from there, also has base of Eretz Yisrael, he has a house in Eretz Yisrael. So there, as we had explained the logic according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, if you just say you're selling it to that native, well, it could be you were selling it for him to maintain this slave in his house in Eretz Yisrael. He'll be the slave who stays over here in this house. So even if he ends up taking him back to Antioch, that's not my fault. I didn't sell him out of Eretz Yisrael. He went there on his own. Now, however, the second brisa, which says that if the first master said, I sold him to this Antioch, to this person from Brooklyn or whatever it is, so that just means that's where he was born. Doesn't mean that's where he lives right now. But still, the second brisa says that the Eved would be Yatz Lecheres. That's because the second brisa is talking about where he doesn't have a house in Eretz Yisrael. Rather, the Islay Ushpiza Eretz Yisrael. He only has a host that puts him up, a temporary dwelling in Eretz Yisrael. There, if you're selling it to him, it's obvious that he's taking him to where his house is, which is only in Chutz La'aretz. However, the second brisa does say, but if you say Hashari Bulud, then you're specifying that, no, for the guy who's dwelling in Lud, to say that I'm only selling him to be in Eretz Yisrael, then it's not Yotz Lecheres. But if you just say La'antoichi, since he doesn't have a house in Eretz Yisrael, the second price says he's going to go free. The first price was told him that he has a house in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it's not definite that he was selling him to go out of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore then we wouldn't apply the penalty of Yotz Lecheres. A related discussion to this about selling a slave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, the Gemara says, "Bei Rabbi Yemir." Bimir had the following question. It says, "Ben Bavel Shenosa Isha be'Eretz Yisrael," regarding a man that lives in Babylon, in Bavel, who married a woman. He went to Eretz Yisrael to marry a woman who lives there. Now, "Ve'chenisa le'avada mishvaches," she brought into the marriage slaves and maidservants. "Ve'daiti lachzer," now the husband's intention is, when they finally get married, to go back and live in his house in Bavel. So the question is, Mahu, what would the halacha be? In other words, do we say that this woman is like selling her slaves to Chutz La'aretz through this marriage? Which the halacha tells us in Ksubas Dav Tzadihim at Beis, that a husband is considered a lekeach, as if he's a purchaser for his wife's properties. That is, it's like he's acquiring them. He gets to use them. It's his. It's like he purchased it. So the question the Gemara is asking is, so essentially, it's like the wife is selling her slaves to Chutzlaretz because it's the husband as the Lekech, and he's taking them to Chutzlaretz. So do they go free or not? So the Gemara explains the question. This is based on the Gemara in Yevamah Stav Samach Vav Mabez, which the halacha is if a woman brings in what's called shum to her husband, which are things that are evaluated and brought into the ksuba, into the marriage. And then, after she brought these properties into the marriage, which the husband gets to use, he's the husband, then he divorces her. So she says, I want to take the vessel that I brought in from my mother, from my father, from my grandmother, which I brought into the marriage. Now, although you were able to use it, but I want to take it with me now that we're getting divorced. And he says, no, I'll pay you the value of them as it was evaluated for me. I had all responsibility, which is what's called nichsi term barzel. They're called their iron sheep because they're guaranteed for the woman when she gets divorced that she'll be getting the value of it. But I'll give you the value. But the responsibility was mine. So if anything would have happened, I would have had to pay. So the object is mine. And I want to give you just the money. I want to keep the vessel now that we're getting divorced. So there is an opinion that says, hadin imoy. The halach is with him. Meaning he gets to keep the vessel. And the reason being is because you're right, since from the moment they got married, the responsibility and the liability was all on him. So essentially, it's like his, and he could just give her the money for it. But there is a man da'amah, there's an opinion that says, no, hadin imma. She gets to take back her vessel when she leaves. And the reason is what's called shvach be'saviyah, because it's the glory of her father's household, which is an heirloom from her great-grandmother. So, of course, even though the responsibility was his, because he was able to use it, but when they leave and she gets divorced, she takes it back herself. So the Gemara explains, tiboy l'man da'amah hadin imma. This question that we're having regarding the woman who's getting married to this Babylonian man and her slaves are going down to Chutzlaretz, if it's like she's selling it to him or not, would be pertainable both according to the one who says hadini ma, that the slaves are really hers, and tiboy lamandam hadini ma, and the same question could be posed according to the one who says, no, they're really considered his. As the Gemara explains, tiboy lamandam hadini ma, you could ask the question according to the one that says that when she leaves a marriage, we consider it as her vessels, as her slaves. Now, the reason is because you could say, kiven da din ima, since we say the law is with her, kedida dami. So essentially, it's like whatever property she brings into the marriage, although the husband could use them, but essentially it's like hers. Because as we see that when she gets widowed or divorced, she takes it back with her. So it's not like she really sold it to the husband, it's like hers. Now, if she goes with the slave down to Chutzlaretz, it's not selling it, it's just going with her. So therefore then, the slave would not go free. Or maybe you could say, kiven the mishabdi le leperes, since ultimately, although she owns the body of these nichsi term basel, including her slave, but since they're indebted, the utility of them, the produce of them, is mishubit that the husband could work with them, so maybe we say kididei dami. So essentially, for all practical purposes, the husband's working them as if it's his, and therefore it's like you're selling it to the husband who is in bubble. So it's like the woman sold it to Chutzlaretz, and therefore the slave would go free. And you could ask the question, the same thing is also with the one who says that the law is with the husband, that when they get divorced, he could hold on to the slave. Why? You say, since you say the law is with him, so yeah, so essentially it's like his, it's like totally sold to him on some level, and therefore the slave would go free, because like she sold it to her husband. Or maybe then no, since ultimately he hasn't acquired the actual body of the slave in totality. In other words, because if let's say he dies or if he divorces his wife and he doesn't end up paying her back with any other way, then of course she takes her vessels back with her. So kedidadami. So ultimately, so it is still considered like hers. And if it's not like it's sold, then therefore the slave would not go free. I think Gemara says, take it, let it stand. It's not clear, according to either interpretation, what would the halacha be in this case when the Bas Eretz Yisrael marries the Ben Bavel, if that's considered like selling it to him, and thus the Eved would be Yotze L'Cheres, or would it not be? And therefore, the slave would not go free. Now, continuing on this theme that we mentioned before, the Gemara says, "Amr bevo, shani li Rabbi Yechonan. Rabbi Yechonan had taught me the following halacha: Eved sheyotza achar rabbi lesuria. If a slave follows after his master to Syria, Aram Tzova, which has the halachic status as chutz la'aretz regarding the sale of slaves." As we learned in the first parak on Avchesa Med Aleph, if someone sells his slave to Surya, we said it's like you sell him to Chutzlaretz, and therefore if you sold him to Surya, he would go free. But this is talking about a different case, where the master just relocates to Surya, and the slave goes with him. U'macharisham rabbi. And there, when they finally got to Surya, then the master sells him to someone else over there in Surya. Says Rabbi Yochanan, Yotze L'Cheres. So then the slave goes free. Now, even though when he originally left Eretz Yisrael with the master, he left willingly, and that is because, as Rashi explains, that had the slave protested when his master was leaving, actually the master would not have been able to force him to relocate to Surya, as the Mishnah teaches us in Masechtas Ksubas Daf Kuf Yud Mabeis, Hakol Malon L'Eretz Yisrael. Everyone could force their family members and their slaves to move up to Eretz Yisrael, but Ve'ein Hakol Maitzin. But you can't force anybody to leave. So therefore, although he was able to protest before coming to Surya, but since he didn't, and now they move to Surya, now that they're B'nai Chutz La'aretz, and he sells them to someone from Chutz La'aretz, you would think that, okay, so he wouldn't go free. Still says Rabbi Avoh, Rabbi Yochanan taught me that he's going to go free. Now that the Gemara asked, but Vatan Rabbi Chiya, but Rabbi Chiya taught in the Braisa, so that even this Chutz, that's not true. That if he sells him in Chutz La'aretz, since, as one would think the logic is, since they had first moved, and the slave didn't protest, and now they're B'nai Chutz La'aretz, and then he sells him, so he lost his right, and therefore, he doesn't go free, because he didn't protest when they moved to Chutz La'aretz. So how do we resolve the contradiction? So the Gemara says, Lekash, it's not a difficulty, and with this we'll understand the halacha of Rabbi Yechanan. Kan Shadas Rabbi Lachzer. Rabbi Yechanan was told about a case where although the master relocated to Surya, but when he had originally left, his intention was always to move back to Eretz Yisrael. Now, so therefore, since although the slave had acquiesced and moved with him to Surya, but since he knew that he's going to move back to Eretz Yisrael, now that he sells him, it's essentially like he's selling him from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. Because although at that moment when he was sold, they were temporarily living in Surya, but they've really been Eretz Yisrael. But now that he's sold to someone else that's a real Ben Surya, you're selling him essentially from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. That's why Rabbi Yochanan said he's still Yotze L'Cheres. Kan, she'in das Rabbi Lachza, but Rabbi Chiya's Brice was talking about where the intention was never to move back home. So since they had moved to Chutz La'aretz, and he was okay with that, he moved with them to Surya, so they're really B'nai Chutz La'aretz now, and now when he sells them to another B'nai Chutz La'aretz, Ibn Ezechusa, he lost his rights by not protesting when they moved, and therefore he doesn't go free when he sold to a fellow Surian. Now the Gemara says, V'atanya, and similarly we learned the same discrepancy, the same explanation of these two opinions in the Braisa. The Braisa says, Yaitse ha'eved achar rabba l'Surya. A slave goes after his master to Surya. Now, just the initial reading of this braisa sounds like that the slave has to follow his master when he moves from Eretz Yisrael to Surya, which the Gemara asks, Yaitse? What? He has to leave with his master to Surya? Loi sagid loi nafik, it's not enough that he doesn't have to leave Eretz Yisrael with his master? But what's not? We learned the Mishnah Masechta Ksubis that says, and we just referenced this before, Ve'ein hakol moitzin, that no one could take out his family members or slaves from Eretz Yisrael if he wants to move to Chutz La'aretz. So El Rav the Gemara amends the reading of the Braisa. It's not Yotze Ha'eved, which sounds like that he has to leave. Rather, Yotze Ha'eved Achar Rabba L'Surya, it's in the past tense. If the slave followed after his master, when the master moved from Eretz Yisrael to Surya, he didn't protest. He could have, but he didn't. Umachare Rabbi Sham, and over there when they finally moved, then the master sold him over there to a fellow Chutz La'aretznik. Im das Rabbi Lachza, so here the Braisa makes the same division that we said. If originally, when they left Eretz Yisrael, the intention of the master was to ultimately return to Eretz Yisrael, then Kaifin I say, then we force the master who now sold them to another Surian to free him, to let him go free. Because essentially, it's like really selling him from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. V'imein das Rabbi Lachza, but if his intention is not to return, then it's like how Reb Chiya's version was, then in Kaif and Isa, then we don't force him because essentially he's a B'nai Chutz La'aretz selling to another B'nai Chutz La'aretz where there is no such halacha as Yotze L'Cheres. Now explaining this halacha from the Mishnah, the Gemara says, the Amar of Anan, he says, Shamet minei demar Shmuel Tarti. He says, I heard regarding two halachas from Shmuel, a psak din, the way he ruled the halacha. Chadahach, one was regarding the halacha that we just mentioned before, regarding when a master sells a slave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, where we say that then the slave goes free. And ve'idach te'idma, the other one was regarding a different halacha, of ha'meicher sedeu b'shnas ha'yevel asma, if someone sells his field during the Yevel year itself, where we have a machlekes Rav and Shmuel. Rav Amar Mechura, it's a valid sale, but the yaitza, immediately that same second that you sold it, it goes right back to the owner, which essentially what that means to say is that the purchaser automatically just lost his money. It's like you put it in, you got the object, and it goes right back in. Because what happens is, although you made the purchase, but since it's Yevel, the halach is that when it reaches Yevel, it goes right back to the one who sold it to you. So although the sale is valid according to Rav, and therefore the purchaser doesn't get his money back, but it goes right back to the owner, to the seller who had sold it to. Whereas the Shmuel Amar, he argues, and he says, Eina mechura kol ikar. No, it's not a sale at all from a kavo chaymer, because if before the Yevil year, a sale is sale, but when it reaches the Yevil year, it goes back to the seller. So now, where it wasn't sold at all, for sure that you can't sell it in the first place, which we have similar svaras like Amar Avriya, which is that if you sell it before she's 12 and then she reaches 12, she goes free. For sure you can't sell it when she's 12. So that's the other halacha from Shmuel. Now Rav Anan said it was regarding these two halachas that I heard teachings from Shmuel, what happens regarding the monies that were given in regarding to these two purchases. Again, regarding one purchaser who purchased, he lives in Chutz Laretz and he bought a slave from someone in Eretz Yisrael, and regarding someone that bought a field from someone during the Yevil year, which regarding both of them that we said, they're not valid sales, and that the purchaser loses the slave, he loses the field. But B'chada, Shmuel told me that regarding one of these two halachas, Hadri Zvini, the money goes back to the purchaser. U'b'chada lo Hadri Zvini, and regarding one of them, he told me that actually the money does not go back to the purchaser. Rather, the purchaser loses his money. But, says Rav Anan, V'lo yadana haiminai. I don't know which one of these two was the one that he says the purchaser loses his money, and which one is the one that he says the purchaser gets back his money. Now, Rashi addresses an obvious question. If, according to Shmuel, by the case of where a person sells his field in the Yevil year, Shmuel said that it's not a valid sale. So if it was regarding that one that Shmuel was saying that the purchaser does not get his money back and that the lekeach loses his money, then the question would be, then what is he disagreeing with Rav? Rav was saying the same thing. Rav said that it's a sale, but it goes right back to the seller. Now, what that obviously means to say that the purchaser just loses his money. So if that's what Shmuel meant, then what is he disagreeing with Rav? So that Rashi says, no, definitely there would still be a disagreement, Rav and Shmuel. Because according to Rav, the sale was a sale. What does that mean? What does it mean, sale to sale? Yeah, you sold it to me, boom, and the money goes right back. In other words, the sphere that you sold me goes right back to you, so I gave you the money, but I'm not getting anything for it. The reason is that if, let's say, together with that karka that he sold in that field, which is called Nechasim Shiesh Bahem Achrayis, where there's always responsibility for a land, you always could collect from it, it's always there, it's not movable, you can sell together with that Nechasim She'en Lehem Achrayis, which is, even if you don't do Meshicha, which is usually what you do for metalim, for movable items, you have to draw to you, you just say you leave it on the land, and with the land you purchase the movable items on it. According to Rav, you have acquired those movable items, because although the land goes right back, but it was a sale, it's just that it's going right back. But according to Shmuel, that says it's not a sale, whereas the monies are considered a gift, as we'll see at the end of this discussion. So therefore, the nechasim she'en lehem achrayis, the movable items, would not be a valid purchase together with the quote sale, which is not a sale of the land, without doing mashiach on it, and therefore he'd be able to retract, because as we said, the monies of the metalin are going to go back, because it was the monies of the karka was really a matana. It's just that because the Gemara concludes, a person knows that there's no valid sales in the Yevil year, because even what you did sell goes back. So obviously his intention was, he concluded, you know what, I'm giving him as a gift. That's obviously what he was intending to do. And that's what Shmuel says when he means, in the mechur kol ikar, according to this interpretation, meaning it's not a sale. So then you would think that he gets his money back. There is an option to say that he doesn't get his money back. It's going to the seller. And how is it different from Rav? It's because Rav's saying it is a sale. He just gets his money back. Shmuel wasn't saying that it's a sale and that the field goes back. Shmuel's not saying that it's a sale, just that the field goes back. He's saying it's not a sale at all. And that's why the seller holds on to his field. The fact that the purchaser we could entertain loses his money is, of course, because why is he quote, buying it from him? He knows there's no buying, because he wants to give it to him as a gift. But ultimately, that was the question Rav Anan had. Just Rashi addressed how could he even entertain that other option of that Shmuel would hold the one that he doesn't get his money back is by the selling of the field in the Yevil year. We explained how that would be a difference. So he didn't know which one was it. Does the purchaser lose the money by the Eved when he buys from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz? Or by the case of the field in Yevil is when he loses his money. So Amar Rav Yosef says, as other times in Shas he says, Nechzeh Na, he says, let's see, let's analyze. Meditani bebraisa, and the fact that we learned the braisa, which was brought in the beginning of this discussion of our Mishnah, we said, Amichir avdi lechutzlart. If someone sells his slave to out of Eretz Yisrael, so yotz lecheres, so then the slave goes free, but mitzarch gets shichur mirabi sheni. He still needs to get, although it goes free, as we've said in previous discussions of Dafim, where although monetarily he's free, but he still needs prohibitory law to free him. So he would still need a document of emancipation. So the second master, the one who bought him in Chutzlaritz, or he finally comes to where he bought him, and the judges say, hey, you bought Daf Meretz Yisrael? He's going free. But ultimately, you bought him, so you have to free him. You have to give the get shecher. So says Rabbi Yosef, Shmami no kanye Rabbi Sheni, obviously, the second master, the second one that owns the one who bought him, obviously, he owns him, he bought him, and then obviously he loses his money. Why? Because if the money would be going back in other words, if the sale of the slave would be going back to the first master, meaning the first one owns him, and the second one who bought him just totally lost his money, meaning he doesn't get the money back, so then why would the second person have to free him? What do you mean? We should force the first one to free him, because that's where the prohibition is. Obviously, we see, as the Gemara says, "V'loy hadri zvini," he doesn't get his money back, because that's why we're calling him the owner. You are the owner. You're not getting your money back, and that's why we need you to write the get shichra. So you're losing your money, because you're going to have to free him. But of course, you're not getting your money back, because if you're getting your money back, then we wouldn't consider you the owner. We would consider the first guy the owner. So, therefore, says Rabbi Yosef, since Ravanan had said from Shmuel that it was only regarding one of these two cases that he doesn't get his money back, so obviously the one that Shmuel said is the one that you do get your money back, is V'chi Amar Shmuel Hasam, that when Shmuel said over there by the case of the field, during the selling it during the Yevil year, that he said, Eina Mechura, that it's not sold, he meant totally it's not sold. And that the money goes back to the purchaser, and that the purchaser has not lost anything. So that's where Rabbi Yosef wants to resolve it. He says, you obviously could prove from that braisa that we're calling him Rabbi Sheni. He's obviously the master. How are you the master? Because you bought it. I mean to say, because that first guy is holding on to your monies. Now you're going to be the one that's losing, however. By the case of the field, that's where Shmuel said, no, it's not a sale at all. The purchaser gets his money back. That's the case where he gets his money back. And the reason being is because it's not a sale. And that's the case of Mois Chazen. Now, the Gemara continues to talk about Memheim and Aleph, but Ravanan, that he didn't know which one of the two is which one Shmuel says that he gets the money back and which one's not, Brisa Lo Shmile, he didn't know of this Brisa to be able to resolve from it, because like Rav Yosef proved, it's pretty obvious if we're calling him Rabbi Sheni by the case of the slave, then that's the case where he's ultimately the one left holding the bag, like they say, and he has to free him. Obviously, that's the case that he's not getting his money back, so then you could say by the case of the field is where he gets his money back. Now, so that's why it's not difficult why Rav Anan wasn't able to resolve the question, because he didn't know the braisa. But now the Gemara says, Ve'imid Shmuel, and if you would want to ask Rav Anan, why didn't you know which one is the one that Shmuel says, you could resolve it from Shmuel's own wording himself. Because in his machleket with Rav, in the case of selling the field in the Yovel year, the wording of Shmuel is, Eina mechur kol ikr. It's not a sale at all. So obviously, you see, it's not a sale. So if it's not a sale, so of course the purchaser is going to get his money back. It's not like it was a sale, but it was a silly sale, and you lost your money. It wasn't a sale at all. So why didn't Rav Anan prove it from Shmuel's own wording that that's the case when he gets his money back? So now the Gemara says no, because mimai de'ena mechura u'mois chayzen, because who knows to interpret that that's what Shmuel means to say, that it's not a sale and you get your money back. Dilma e'ena mechura, maybe what Shmuel is saying is that it's not a sale, regarding that as we discussed before, where it's not a sale, in regards to that you can't even be kaina nechasim she'im b'machrayis together with nechasim she'yesh b'machrayis. Like we explained for Rav, that although the guy is going to lose the field and he's not getting the money back because it's a mechura b'yetzim, at least it was a sale and you could be kaina other things through that. Now, that's what we're saying, that maybe according to Shmuel, what he's coming to address is it's not a sale, but emoyis matana ninu, but maybe the money he loses too in that case. Why? Because maybe the money is a gift. Why would we say that? The Gemara says we actually find such a precedent by someone that tells his sister, I want to get engaged to you. He engages his sister, he gives her a ring, and he says, Hared Mukadesh Asli. With the Itma, we learned, Hamakadesh Asachais, if someone gets engaged to his sister. So Rav says, Mois, the money of Kedushin that he gave to his sister, Achaisrin, They go back to the brother, because everybody knows you can't get engaged to your sister. And what was he meaning when he was giving his sister Kiddushin money? He was just depositing it with her to hold on to it, and therefore it goes back to him. Yeru Shmuel Amar Mo'is Matana. Shmuel says that no, everybody knows you can't get engaged. So what was he meaning to do? He was meaning to gift it to her, because he was giving it to her. He just was doing it under the guise of Kiddushin, and therefore, that's the same thing why there was no difficulty why Rav Anan couldn't resolve the question, which one was it Shmuel saying it, because he didn't know the braisa that Rav Yosef resolved it from, and neither could he resolve it from Shmuel's own words, because although Shmuel's words seemed to indicate by the case of the field that that is the case, which again, as Rav Yosef had resolved from the braisa, that you get your money back, because it's an enem achur kalikki, he's saying it's not a sale. If it's not a sale, why wouldn't I get my money back? It's not like Rav said that it's a sale, just you lose, the field goes right back. And that is what the Gemara is saying. No, we find that Shmuel himself in another area of Halacha says that there could be something that it's not a Kedushin, but still the money that you're giving, you won't get back because you're giving it as a gift. So therefore, we would think to say that maybe the same thing would apply over here by the Yovel year too. When you're buying from the seller in the Yovel year, where although he's saying it's not a sale, but if you're buying, why are you doing it? You really want to give that guy money. You're just doing it under the guise of purchasing. So you would think, although it's not a sale, but the money you don't get back, because that's a gift, that's what Rav Yosef is resolving from the price that you see clearly that if it was Shmuel told you, to you, Rav Anan, that there's these two halachas, and one of them, you lose the money as a purchaser. When you get it back, I could prove to you that the one that Shmuel was saying, that the one is that you get the money back, was the case of the Yevil year, because by the case of the Yevid, you clearly lose your money because we're calling the purchaser as Rabbi Sheni, who has the right to get Shechar. Again, as we said, that obviously he's the guy left holding the bag, that he's stuck with the Yevid and the money stays by the seller, and he's the one that ends up losing out by having to let the Yevid go free.